Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayler Thompson.
My name is Adam Lavaz. Thanks for joining us for episode 66, the first one of term four. And I don't know about you, Rick, but I'm sitting here tonight in this chair. My wallet is $90 lighter. After having to pay my VIT rego over the holidays.
Well, congratulations, Adam. I think it went up a couple of dollars.
It always does. I felt like when I first started teaching, it was almost high 60s. And now all of a sudden we're paying $90 and I still don't know what we pay it for.
No, and I know what I had to pay for. I had to pay for a survey that I completed this year, Adam, to declare some of the professional learning that I'd done.
Yeah, so you had to pay for that.
Well, I'm just saying that because I didn't get anything else for my $90. No. So, yeah.
That's always a big one. I know that our group of friends that are all teachers, there was that reminder on the 30th of September to make sure you could pay your VIT rego because they'll dock you an extra $30.
That's real, they will, yeah. I reckon they probably want that $30, you know.
I reckon they do because they kind of send out a reminder in August that you don't hear from them again.
Absolutely.
Kind of almost in the hope that, you know, you get that one in August and go, yeah, I'll do that soon. And then they're $30 richer.
I've noticed that that the leadership at both schools I've worked at will always send out emails to remind staff
as well, I guess,
because for one, they do need teachers registered. For those interstate listeners and overseas, it is the Victorian Institute of Teaching. We've talked about it before. That's the body that does our...
They register
us as teachers.
You kind of want to say it's the body that does something, you know, that's something along the line there that my $90 goes towards. I hope it pays someone's wage.
That's right.
Yeah. But we have to say as well, obviously, it's the beginning of term four. And for Rick, you and I, we're both doing swimming at the moment. And it's a very tough way to kick off term four because, as a lot of people would know, the swimming areas that you go to are oppressively hot.
Yes.
And coming in and out and stuff, it really messes with your body and your mind, and it's just, yeah.
Well, not only do you lose teaching time, now I don't have a huge problem with that, because it's not just about swimming, is it? I know a friend of ours pointed out the last couple of days to us, Adam, that it's a great chance for kids to show organisation and all that sort of stuff. But we've got a 25-minute bus ride and 25-minute bus ride back
each day. That's 50 minutes, that's a lesson.
And like you said, you get hot and sticky at the pool, and then you've got that bus ride, and I'm wiped when I get back to school.
Yeah, me too. And actually, the bus ride home, we've only got maybe 10 minutes tops, the bus ride home, but I have to sit on my own. I tell the kids don't sit next to me because you come out of that and sit on the bus and the bus is hot and it's stuffy with kids and you feel sick. Like, I feel sick on that ride home. It's pathetic, isn't it? Maybe we're just soft, mate, and getting old.
No. Well, mate, maybe we are.
Maybe we are. So anyway, mate, we're really happy to be back for term four, the party term, as I like to call it. You know, we're getting towards the end there. It's Christmas and that sort of stuff. You party it up a little bit. So we've got some three great topics tonight and I think we should get into it.
Absolutely. We've got some great topics. Let's go. Well, Adam, our first topic tonight actually goes back to the end of Term 3, a topic that we were going to touch on before we had to cancel that last episode. It was in the recent edition of the Australian Education Union News, and the heading was Stressed Out and Always On. And it came up at the recent AEU conference about digital technology maybe not always saving teachers' time or other people in the business. And a lot of the quotes in the article came from an article that was in an edition of Professional Voice by Dr. Neil Selwyn. And his study was called Teachers Versus Technology.
Yep.
And just talking about how technology is so pervasive in education now. And I'm not talking about the students here, more about teachers and educators, he was saying. That it's so pervasive now that a lot of the stuff you see about what technology has done to the teaching profession is always put in a positive light. And you and I agree, there's a lot of positive aspects
definitely.
To it. Things are quicker, streamlined. Teachers can kind of pick up work from where they left off anywhere, anytime. And they can choose where they want to work. Now, there's a lot of positives with that, isn't it?
Choose
when and where I do my work.
Yep.
He's challenging some of the research he's done. He is saying challenges the fact that too often we don't talk about maybe the negative aspects of that, is that it's kind of made the education profession 24/7. What do you think of that initially?
Well, I think the mentioning of that we talk about it in that negative light, we go for the positive, I think comes from the fact that that's what the education department wants us to think. They want us to think that this is such a positive aspect and it's a positive part of our teaching. When you're right, I think the stressed out and always on is really apt sort of title. If we think back to the holidays that we've just had, how many teachers, I'm going to throw this out there to teachers, how many teachers out there still check their email? had a dig on their phone, might have flicked through something that came from a school, might even have an app. Like, I've got an app on my phone for our school. It dinged on the weekend, like, with things that are being sent out and reminders and things.
Yes.
You can't do, say, what you might have done 20 years ago when there were no computers, no email. You kind of did your things at school and then you went home.
Yep.
Yeah, there was no way for the school to really contact you. They couldn't send you that email, give you a real call, send you a text, ding it on your phone. You could kind of...
Take
that time away and drown it out a little bit. Now, with everything you've got a computer, you've got an iPad, you've got a mobile phone, you've got everything. It's constantly in your face and it wears you down. Even if you want to go, no, I don't want to do that, there's still so many ways for it to pervade into your everyday life.
And I think a level of communication and a level of getting jobs done or getting emails replied to is something that is increasing, where the point I'm trying to make is that if I go into work, I might not check my emails, let's say, for a little while, but when I'm home that night, I might happen to flick and I see an email from another colleague and we start to think, well, they've emailed at night, they want something, I'm not going to email it back because I'm doing something else, but what are they going to think? Are they do I need to? And you start, not everyone does this, but you start questioning yourself. What Salomon says in his article is the blurring of professional and personal life, which technology facilitates and in some ways promotes, he says. He sums up that all told, teaching is no longer something that only takes place within the confines of the working day.
Yeah.
Now, it's still a choice thing, isn't it, Adam? But he also mentions that if someone just does what you mentioned before, if you just flick open your smartphone and just flick through your emails quickly, you still work. Like, how can that not be work? A lot of teachers will do all their emails outside their working time as like a real satisfying thing, get them done before I actually start my proper work. But that's he argues that that's all work.
It is.
And where do we draw the line?
Because where do you get the time during the day at school to reply to emails? I mean, I actually try sometimes to sit when it's recess and the kids are sitting there having their munches, they're sitting at their table, I might quickly sit down and go, right, And what else I hate is someone who might send that email at night and come in first thing in the morning and go, did you get my email? You feel like, well, no, because it wasn't work time. I was home watching my favourite TV. I was watching The Block. I was actually reading a book. I was out playing some sport or something like that. You know, there shouldn't be that expectation that they pop in the morning like that and say, do you know, and then you feel guilty. Then you start going, should I be checking them more often at night and getting back to them and doing this to keep them happy and things? But again, that's where that blurred line sort of comes in. It makes it really difficult.
And it does. Look, it wasn't just about email either. He mentioned that with a lot of these learning management systems that are all online, which we've talked about, like Compass, like Central, he says that this is, as much as a lot of those platforms are positive and do a lot of great stuff, they're standardising teacher work. An example is the cut and paste approach, perhaps, to reports. And also standardising teachers' work, he says that it's more available for peers to see. So colleagues can now see perhaps a bank of my comments and a bank of my individual learning plans on the learning management system. And now pressure starts to mount about who's more accountable and have I been accountable? And he said, you know, again, there's positives in that in terms of collegiality and holding people to account in some respects, but also it just adds the pressure.
It's such an interesting topic, Rick, because it does add to the pressure and there are pros and cons. Again, coming back to technology just as a whole, it's really hard to find a happy medium. I mean, is there an expectation? I mean, who's going to be the first principal to say, you know, I want you to go home and turn off your technology? Who's going to be the first to say, I don't want you checking emails? When you come in the morning, you can check your emails then. I don't want you doing those sorts of things. Who's going to be the first printer to do that? Are we in a position as teachers these days with our workloads that we can actually do that? There's always that pressure in the back of your mind.
My question would be I would tweak what you said a little bit, is which print or which leadership would say that and make it a regular thing? As a work ethic all year, you know, you put in here, but relax there and look after yourself there. I know that the leadership I've worked under have said, at intermittent times, have said, you know, look after yourself here and you don't need to be checking at this time, but it's not a consistent message to get all the way through. And then when you receive messages from leadership that come in late, I guess that's just hard because most people probably write an email if they do at 10 p.m. at night, not expecting people to reply. But there is still that underlying
Could they bring it in once a week, the Thursday night switch off? You know, that all staff Thursday when you leave the school grounds, turn it off. I don't want anyone sending emails. I don't want anyone doing these sorts of things. If you think of something you need to email, well, see them in the morning. or do something like that, maybe bring that in to take a little bit of that pressure off.
Yep, I agree. And I think what Selwyn argues overall is that, you know, if you've got it turned on and you're looking through it, then your mind is on it.
And
your mind's not on, I guess, your life and other things. And I tend to agree with that.
So have you got any thoughts about technology and the fact that we're stressed out and always on, and, you know, how you feel about that, and maybe some things that we can do to bring some of that stress down? We'd love to hear from you.
Well, Adam, late term three and I guess early term four, I know that you have been on a handful of excursions, and I know you want to talk about things that go wrong on excursions.
Well, things are right. It does sound a little bit anecdotey, but I know that we've got a few things we could talk about, because we could bring swimming into this as well. But yeah, we had a big excursion up to the MCG. It was on a Tuesday in the last week of term when we had the really wet and wild weather to the point where we were on a strict timeline.
So for those outside the state, it was a trip to Melbourne, wasn't it?
Yeah, trip to Melbourne from Geelong. Yeah. Which generally takes on the ring road, if you're going to the G, decent things, probably take an hour tops, you know? So we had a strict timeline. We had to be there by 10:30, you know, had all these things planned, back on the bus because we got to be back by a certain time because kids catch a bus home. This weather just threw everything out the door. We had to be inside by 11, and we were going to have some food outside and do that stuff. So like here, they went out there. We literally arrived at 11. It was so bad, and everything was the rain, it was hailing, it was thundering, it just threw us out completely. So we kind of had the quickest tour of the MCG. Now, I had an old fellow, I can't remember what his name was, and he kind of...
Well, there are a lot of old stewards who work there.
There are the old stewards, and he had the big MCC jacket on, and it was raining, and he was going to take us down onto the ground, and he got sort of halfway there, it was raining, he goes, oh no, I don't think we can do this. I went, yes, we can, mate, we'll just go on the interchange bench. He's like, oh, okay, and so he took us down, and we got to quickly see the rooms, quickly see the long room. That was it. There were so many other areas he could have taken us. But because we were behind, he had to rush us through. So we got down, shoved some food in our mouths, go down to the sports museum. Now, you know, White Line Fever Lavars, you know, you get into that sporting area where you can kick the balls, you can bowl
cricket ball.
Yeah, some of the kids are lined up to go. I just pushed in. No, Miss Lavars is go. You know, line it up for the big goals.
And you would have too. I would have.
But I just thought it was one thing that I think on a serious side of things that parents don't appreciate, and maybe the wider community, that excursions are a really big deal in the sense that you do have certain timelines to keep, and you do have such a wide variety of personalities, kids, and things to deal with that. One minor thing, for us it was the weather, can knock you off course, and it's really hard to get back in and to hit all the marks you wanted. Because it was an expensive excursion, going to the G, the bus, things like that. You wanted it to be worthwhile. You wanted kids to go home and go, that was so good. If they go home and go, it wasn't that good, or we didn't do this or that, parents think, I just wasted $20.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So the throw to you, mate, I know it does sound a little bit anecdotey, but have you had excursions that have gone a little bit haywire or have gone a little bit wrong that it was just really hard to get back?
Oh, there's heaps. And there's some, obviously, that have been great. But you're right, it can be weather, like you described, and then it could be one student who falls ill and it can affect the whole thing. It can be poor organisation on someone's part, all sorts of things. There was a couple. I mean, even this week at swimming, at the swimming lessons, some of the other year levels are doing it. So the first year level to go, I think, is year five in the morning, and they take a school first aid kit with them.
Yep.
And then that stays there at the pool for the whole time.
Yep.
And the final group brings it back. When we arrived yesterday, one of the teachers who, to be fair, is a fill-in teacher, I think, accidentally took the first aid kit home, so we didn't have one there.
Yep.
Now, a pool you would think would have one, but there was a young boy who turns out he had a really bad head cold, but was suffering from a little bit of asthma and had forgotten his pump, which is bad. But we got worried. Well, I got worried. I'm like, there's no first aid kit. You know, where is it? And so you start to have those sort of panic moments. Another classic one, and I know you've talked about this venue in a past podcast, is the Science Works Museum in Melbourne. A few years ago, going with our school, and I may have mentioned this on that podcast, but in terms of things going haywire, I remember we hadn't quite worked out exactly how one area of the Science Works was going to work. We thought that we had like an usher to take us around to these certain areas. But we didn't. And instead, this one usher said, right, now in this room, you've got this, this, and this. You know, it was kind of like that open space. You might remember all different things in there, different, reflecting mirrors. And
things. All that sort of stuff.
And this usher just said, right, and you go for it. Well, they didn't say go for it, but they said, and off you go. And we hadn't had a chance to sort of grab the year threes and fours and go, hang on. And we were literally, reaching out. And they just took off. And if you've ever been in there, there's sort of maze areas. You can't see around corners. Yep. They just went and
dispersed,
ran.
Dispersed everywhere, yep, and off they go.
It was an absolute schmozzle. We had the, and there were members of the public complaining. And
oh, really? Was, you yeah. actually had members of... And oh, see, that's
they were just running
too.
And screaming. Like, it was... like I felt like running and just hiding myself for that one.
Because yeah. it is, you are out in the public, and one little thing like that that goes wrong, you feel other people looking at you going... jeez, come on, you know, I shouldn't have to put up with this sort of stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
you get those sympathetic looks too from members of the public if you're on excursion sometimes, like, wow. And it's almost sometimes you get that nod from them, like, wow, I could never do what you're doing right now. And I kind of like that. You kind of feel like you are really, you're doing something really good. You're managing a big bunch of kids in a public place.
It's not easy to do. And I think the biggest one that comes up, and I know we talked about it earlier, is swimming. I think a lot of parents who don't get up a lot, who are able to come up and watch swimming and want to take their kids home or something, like, get a real understanding when, you know, you're coming out exasperated, some kids lost their pair of jocks or they're missing a shoe, and you know, there's those things going on, and you've got to try and do that, and there's other kids doing different things who are mucking around, and you've got to try and keep it all together. I don't think the wider public really has a real appreciation of how difficult some of those things can be, and the planning, and how worried and stressed you really can get. I mean, the adrenaline some days when you come out from an excursion, the kids are gone, you honestly go, like, the shoulders slump a bit, you kind of go, right, I can actually relax now. I've been on since not from 9 to 3:30. I haven't had a break. Even eating my lunch, you're still watching the kids. Who's throwing a bit of bread to a bird, and then all the seagulls are coming in, and, you know, all those sorts of things. It's a big deal.
It is. And, I mean, I guess to kind of finish off, I think one of the big positives, though, is, and I think you mentioned this off air, particularly with the swimming program, is that it gives a good chance for kids to show organisation, to try and look after their belongings, and just to be independent citizens. And I think that's what I do love about excursions, is seeing some kids really rise to that challenge.
Yeah, it is really good. So look, if you've had something go wrong on an excursion, from a small thing to a large thing, hit us up, because we'd love to hear about it. We might even add it into an anecdote at some stage during this term.
Sure.
So Rick, for our third topic tonight, it was something that actually came to my attention very late in the holidays. Now, my sister-in-law is currently finishing up her teaching degree. She's finished up. She's currently doing her last set of rounds. I don't know if you know, but they actually do a whole month block of rounds in October now. So when they finish up, so they do something, and then they finish uni, so she's actually finished uni now, and then they do a whole month block of teaching rounds. Now, that could be a discussion for another time, because while I think it's good, they should be giving them time to actually apply and do jobs and that sort of stuff. Having to do lesson plans and apply for a job, you know, is a big ask. That's for another time. She brought to my attention that, you know, in the next couple of weeks, I can't remember if it was this week or next week, that all of the fourth year pre-service teachers in her year have to go, I think it's to Ballarat, they have to sit a compulsory 2-hour literacy and 2-hour numeracy test to basically determine their suitability to be a teacher, that they've got to pass these tests. Not only do they have to pass these tests, but they have to pay $180 for the privilege of doing so. Now, this really brought something up. I instantly thought podcast. When she brought this up, I instantly thought it's the perfect topic for a podcast, because there are so many pros and so many cons to the way they're going about it. Now, Rick, when I brought this up with you and I talked about it, what were your first sort of thoughts and things about it?
My first thoughts were what we've seen coming out of universities in the last couple of years, and also it's been reaching the media, is that that we want the best, that they want the best people going into education. So therefore, perhaps things like a literacy and numeracy test need to happen. So my initial thinking was, good. But then my alarm bells went, because I think, and I know you've talked about this off air, is that why is it at the end of their teaching degree? So you do 4 years, most universities, not all, and then at the end you have to do it. I mean, I'll get to the costs later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I find that fascinating. I mean, my thinking is that perhaps drip feed these tests over the course of the entire degree, and then lecturers could see, you could see like the general like progression of a student, and if they are struggling, there could be an intervention to help, or perhaps, you know, they're guided to something else. At the end, it's sort of like, well, if I do all that, because what if they're a fantastic teacher in the classroom? Literacy and numeracy skills are really important, I know.
Yep.
But if you just, if you only just didn't pass, I don't know.
It feels like a panic move. I feel like they've thought of this, they thought it's really, really good, and then they've shoved it in at the end of the fourth year. What they should have done, to me, is gone, this is a really, really good idea. What we'll do from 2017 is, before we necessarily accept someone into the course, or before the course itself starts, or however they want to do it, let's have them sit this test. So they can sit and go, look, I think I'd be a good teacher. Let's sit fresh out of, you know, high school, or if they're coming in as mature age, sit these two tests, and then they can get their results back. And someone might go, look, you're perfect. You've got these understandings of what you kind of need. Someone might get that back and go, you know, I'm struggling a bit. Mm. And they might get another opportunity and go, look, you need to brush up on these in your first couple of years. And given that sort of opportunity, giving it to someone at the end of 4 years, you think they should be able to handle it after their rounds. But what happens if it blows up in their face?
Well, that's
dedicated 4 years and they miss out because of this. It's strange to me.
I wonder what the pass rate will be or is for these tests. Like, I wonder what the percentage has to be, what has to be correct for them to pass. Now, the $180 out of their own pocket, that's tough. I mean,
for a uni student, it's tough.
My thinking was, if this is going to be part of a course now, why couldn't it be kind of incorporated into their HEX debt? Mm.
Or why can't the education department pay for it? I mean, I just paid $93 for my registration. Surely they could chuff in a couple of dollars to give these tests. I mean,
well, maybe even subsidise some of it and reduce the price. I mean, $180, that is a lot. Yeah.
It is a lot of money to sit a couple of tests.
Yeah,
what are they paying for? Are they giving them gold pencils? Mm. Is it are they writing on marble paper or something like that? I mean, I don't get. But the $180, like you said, I think couldn't they be absorbed into their HEX somehow? Couldn't they find a better way to do it? I just think.
I don't disagree with having rigorous, I guess, assessment on an adult's literacy and numeracy abilities, because you do need even more so today than probably yesterday.
You do. And how often
teachers in the profession have strong knowledge like that?
And how often do you talk to a new graduate who you say go to do a new maths topic, like in the 5-6s you might go to do fractions? And I know for me 10 years ago when we had to sit down and do fractions and I nodded along while we were planning it, and I left that planning session and after school grabbed the book out and retaught myself how to do some of these fractions. Now, as soon as I started doing, that sort of stuff. But you do forget some of these things. So there is definitely plenty of validity in doing these tests and going over and going, look, if you're going to be a primary school teacher, these are the things you have to know to be able to do it. I see the validity in that, but giving it to them now at the end of the year when they've got a month's worth of rounds, they're going to be applying for jobs, they're going to be doing so many different things, I think screams panic. And I think it's quite short-sighted.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I don't disagree with doing it, but I think at the end, I see more of why not do pieces of it over the course of a degree so you can see the progression of a student. So great topic.
Yeah, I love that idea, mate. And look, I want to throw it out to our listeners. Do you feel outraged? Do you think your students suck it up? You know, how do you feel? What side of the fence do you kind of land on? We'd love to hear about it because I do think it's an interesting one. A lot of us could go back to our uni days. How would we feel about it if we were still in uni?
Yeah, and good luck to any pre-service teachers who are completing that test in the coming months.
Definitely. So, the hand pass, very much like the Doggies, the quick hand passing team, the Premiers. I'm going to hand pass over to Rick for the first anecdote of Term 4.
Well, Adam, when you arrived at the studio, in inverted commas, today, you actually commented on what something to do with my anecdote today. So, as you know, Adam, and as some of our listeners who perhaps I caught up with at the Digicom conference back in July know, I've been attempting to grow a beard and some facial hair since late May, Adam. Now, I'm not the hairiest of blokes, so I've got to a point where it's the longest it's ever been.
Yeah. Can I just say to our listeners, that's late May 2001. He's been having a time.
and the hair's quite long. So it's a different look for me, Adam.
It's a becoming look. I think it's good.
Well, it's probably pretty soon coming off, you know. Yeah. And there was a bit of a minor bet with some friends who were also growing some facial hair, and I seem to have won because they've all shaved since then. But anyway, that's another story. But it made me think about perceptions of teachers and how we look and how we dress and the way that students react to it, Adam. Because on the first day of this term, obviously my year three students have been used to seeing me with facial hair. Today, though, they made a comment because I wore a beanie to the swimming program and I took it off when we got back to school.
Yep. Yep.
And my hair was, you know, a bit skew-iff.
And
it's quite long, isn't it, and curly at the moment. And they were making lots of comments, oh, your hair's really curly. It looks really different. And so I am intending to get it cut quite short in the next week or so.
Yep.
And to shave my beard off.
Yep.
And I just know, Adam, that when I get to school, particularly if I do it on a weekend and get to school on the Monday, there'll be quite an enormous reaction from the students.
Yes, there will be. Yeah.
But it's amazing. I remember last year sitting in front of my year sixes one day and I bought some new shoes. But they didn't stand out so much. They weren't bright white or anything. And one of the girls just said, "You've got new shoes." It was the first thing she said when she walked in.
Yep.
And it made me think back to when I was a student, Adam, how you did notice any kind of change in your teachers. And if particularly, you know, but it's funny with the beard because some teachers, if they start with a beard, then that's the teacher with the beard.
Yeah.
And so if they don't have a beard, it's weird.
It really throws me out. And they just never miss a beat. They really never miss a beat. And I know last term when we had a warmish day, I actually wore just a short sleeve button shirt that I hadn't worn since term one. And the kids all walking in were going, "Oh, new shirt, Mr. LaBarz." Oh, no, I wore this one in term one. And, you know, they just haven't seen it in a while.
Well, it's funny,
so they kind of feel like you've gone out of your way to buy something new. People who have met me know that, you know, I've got a little bit of a beard myself. I always have a bit of facial hair, and I've got the shaved head and stuff. But if my hair gets a little bit long and then I shave it, the kids, the next morning, the first thing, I walk out my door and to greet the kids, the first thing yelling out, "You've had a haircut!"
Yeah.
You know, and I try and come up with a stupid story every time. I go, actually, I woke up this morning and it was gone.
Yeah, I've said that too.
No, you didn't. No, I did. I reckon it's runaway. I try and make up a stupid
sometimes
story.
If they say, "You've had a haircut," I put my hand up there and go, "Have I? It doesn't feel the same." Yeah,
and you can see a couple of faces go, "He's full of it." And then a few other faces kind of go, Is he serious here? Those ones might even question you later and go, is it really gone? Or, do you really not know you've had a haircut? You know, they quietly come and ask you about it and stuff, but they never miss a beat. A new pair of shoes, anything different about yourself, they just notice instantly.
It's funny though, as an adult now, I can still remember a high school teacher who used to wear trackies to school every day. He was a phys ed teacher who just looked like a slob. And I also remember one who looked like a moth might fly out of his old sort of tweed jacket. You know, and that's what you remember about them. So,
but we know as teachers too, if you've got clothes that are comfy, you're going to hold on and wear those clothes as often as possible. Mm. If you know they look nice and you go to school and you feel like you're dressed nice and they're really comfortable, you're going to rely on those clothes quite a lot in the coming years.
Do you have work clothes, Adam? Do you kind of have like a work wardrobe and a casual wardrobe?
I do and I don't. I do. There might be mixtures in the rotation sometimes where I look at something and go, "Yeah, I might wear that to school. I haven't worn that to school in a while," or a bit of vice versa and that sort of stuff.
Have you ever graduated or transitioned any pieces of clothing from, say, casual wear to school or vice versa?
No, but what I have done, I wore my, when I got married, the button shirt that I wore to get married, I deliberately, the way I did it was so I could re-wear it. So I had it and made it look nice, and I actually wear it under sweaters, so it pokes out. Like information nights, I've actually worn it as I normally would have, and it's a really comfy shirt. So that graduated from wedding to a 1-2 classroom. It's a bit of a step down, really.
Sometimes different schools have different kind of dress standards too, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
That's probably a whole other topic. But I know the two schools I've worked at are a little bit different. But look, if you've got a beard and you're trying to grow it, or if you've had a comment about your clothing, please share it with us. And no, I'm not putting a photo of my current status on the blog.
So, Rick, that brings an end to episode 66, and I must admit, mate, it's really nice to be back in the chair. It always is to get term four, and we're really hopeful, as we always are, that we'll be able to have plenty of episodes this term. But as all teachers out there, not just in Victoria but around the world know, things get the better of you, and reports will be coming up, so we're going to strive as often as possible, but there may be the odd time where things don't go our way. And Rick, I do want to throw to you to finish off, because I know you had a couple of words you wanted to say.
Well, some of our listeners would have seen on our Facebook page at the end of last term, we mentioned that we were very sad to hear of the passing of Nathan Jones. Great bloke. He was a champion of the podcast, a Victorian teacher who was really admired and liked by many. Fantastic guy who passed away of cancer about 3 weeks ago. And I just thought, of our first podcast back since that news, it'd be just nice to mention Nathan. We never, unfortunately, got him on. He's part of our Vic PLN. We did mention some of his work a few times. I only caught up with him in July at DigiCon, and he had told me that things were getting pretty tough for him. But again, he was just in great spirits and delivering a presentation about his expertise. Mm. One of the best, I guess, when I initially started meeting other educators around Victoria, one of the best that I'd seen with using iPads, and particularly augmented reality with iPads. So look, our thoughts go out to his family, and we might post on the blog, particularly for those people who maybe would like to know more about his professional expertise. Mel Cashin wrote a fantastic tribute to the work he's done on the DLTV site, and so we might put that on the blog. But from Adam and I, we just say vale Nathan Jones.
Well said, mate. Very well said. So from me, Adam LaBarz.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.